This is the Black Chisel Podcast. Real people, real experiences, real resilience.
Look, what I'm going to do is I'm going to get straight into it, right? It's 7 o'clock, so let's introduce our awesome special guest. And so, look, could I introduce Carney? Come online, Carney.
Hello.
How are you, mate?
Good, actually, yeah.
Where's the wonderful Ivy?
She is right behind me.
Can we see Ivy, please?
On her throne.
There. Oh, look at the magnificent Ivy. So just,
she
looks happy. I wouldn't mind one of those little beds myself, to be honest with you. We've got a big one for the bulldog, but that gets dragged all over the place. So people, let me introduce properly. Carney's an incredible person I was fortunate enough to meet in recent time, and since then we've engaged quite a few times, and equally has, you know, the wonderful coach Greg Cream, and we've built a bit of a triad there, I guess, and that triad's going to grow going forward. The wonderful Ivy, though, forms part of the dynamic duo, and hence why I need to introduce and make a fuss around, because, I mean, we're all, many of us are dog owners and everything else, but Ivy's actually a working dog. Ivy's a service dog that Carney has, and Ivy supports Carney through her day-to-day, if you like, and I'll let Carney talk more about that as we go through, and that's why, Ivy's with us, and I was fortunate to spend 2 days in a workshop environment with Ivy, and she got me through much of the trauma that I faced, including trying to get coffee and also trying to get through an exam at the end, and also more so trying to use Wi-Fi. But Ivy got me through. So, Carney, talk to me a little bit more, mate. Let's talk straight up. Let's talk about Ivy. Who is Ivy to you?
She's my lifesaver. She's my right hand, to be honest. Yeah. I have been blessed. I was given Ivy 4 years ago this month, and Ivy came to me from Integra, which is an organisation who made up of 2 people. One used to be a politician and the other one used to be 2 Commando. And they have dogs from Border Force and Vision Australia. Right. Some of them are just good dogs. They just notice from pups that they'll be great, but most of them Vision Australia or Border Force dogs. And Ivy used to be a Border Force dog. And she was trained to detect both tobacco and explosives. But then after a while, Ivy got a little bit too attached to the handler and started developing anxiety. And therefore, it was best for her to be re-employed. And being a government dog, obviously, there's a lot of money involved in her. She's worth about $45,000, $50,000, and her bloodline is quite pure and protected. The only government job that she could do that she was always going to be with someone was to be a service dog for a veteran. And that's how she came into my life. She actually went to an army guy. He discharged, moved to Perth, and then during COVID, I messaged the CEO and said, look, put me on the list. It's going to take 2 years. And he said, actually, no, Carney, we've got a dog that needs to be rehomed. She's been with her handler for 3 years, but he has developed allergies towards her. And because of COVID, they can't fly her. So wow. He can't fly to Mandra from the...
Yeah.
It's around 2 weeks. And I couldn't live without
him.
She's absolutely
amazing. She is awesome, mate. It's such a beautiful dog. It's such a beautiful spirit. And we'll talk more about, your background in the military and obviously why you've come to having Ivy as a great support mechanism. Let's talk more then about you. Let's open with, as I said to you yesterday in conversation, I want to open here because we talk resilience here. We talk resilience an awful lot because resilience, for me, it underpins performance, and that's our playground, you know. Ours is about people achieving things. But without a foundation of resilience, our ability to cope, our ability to adapt, our ability to keep growing from experience, you know, you can't perform. So when I say resilience to you, Carney, you know, just at a very authentic level, what does resilience mean to you? How would you describe it or define it to other?
I was thinking about this morning, actually, when I was brushing my teeth. I'm a visual person, so for me, I have to visualize something. So resilience is hard for me to get my head around. And so the way I think of resilience is like a Navy ship. And a Navy ship is made of many compartments that are watertight. So when sometimes we take on water in our ship, and that's not good, it's not a good day, but you might lose one compartment to a flood. It doesn't mean that you lose the whole entire ship. So those compartments to me represent parts of my life. It might be my professional life, might be my personal life, it might be my parenting. But sometimes I might lose a compartment, but my ship still sails. I don't sink. I don't stop. I still keep on tracking to where I need to go. I go in and I fight and I do what I've got to do, but my ship still floats. And that to me is how I articulate and I put my head around resilience in the best way.
That is cool as shit, Carney. That is seriously. Last week we had Tim Grant, I think I mentioned to you, the rugby league professional, and he was talking of bamboo flexing and everything else. But that is probably the coolest analogy of resilience that I've ever heard. I really could visualize that as well, you know. Not that I've been on a Navy ship, but I could just visualize that aspect. That's cool, mate, because I use a similar one where I talk about a bucket and we've got to turn the taps off or turn the taps down, because if we don't, the bucket becomes overwhelmed with water. So I really like that. That's cool. That's very cool. So let's segue straight into it then. Let's talk about your Navy career. How long? How many people did you blow up? That kind of thing.
I did 11 years. So 11 years it's not much. I wanted to be a career person, but unfortunately that didn't work out that way. But in saying that, I feel like I've done 36 years. So I was born into a very military family.
Yes.
Third generation. My parents are Army. So all I have known and lived and breathed is the defense. So I joined up when I was 19 from Nowra, which is in the south coast of New South Wales.
Yeah, cool spot.
I grew up with my mum, who's a single mum in the Army. So my life, I just went from one state to another. My mum went to Afghan and Iraq in 2001 when we lived in Swanbourne, and my dad is SAS, and so he went over there. At the age of 13, that's when I found out that my dad was SAS, and that was when he left to go to Afghanistan. That's when I found out, oh, by the way, your dad's SAS. I never got to see my dad until I was 13 when I last saw him, and I never got to see him until I was 19, and that's when
wow.
I met.
Yeah. And you thought to remind me, Carney, pre the 13 years of age, you thought of him as what? Was it as a truck driver you shared with me once before? Is that right?
Mum was a truck driver, so she actually was a minority. She was one of four females in a warehouse full of men, and she joined the Army when women had just moved to Kapuka. So she was the second group of females. So she was a minority. So I just thought my dad was a dumbass. So I'm not just saying that, but I just thought that was my dad. He was goofy. Everything's a joke to my dad. He was on his motorbike. Everything is just a big laugh. And I was shocked when I found out he was a sniper in the SAS.
Well, that's a difference. You're at show and tell, so to speak, at school, and you're saying, yeah, dad's just a truck driver, so to speak, and again, like, nothing is wrong with that. And next year, a month later, you're saying, yeah, by the way, he's a sniper. Brilliant.
Well, Iona. I didn't culturally fit Iona. So when 9/11 happened, we weren't allowed to talk about it. Yeah, sit there and not talk about it. Actually in shock. I didn't know what was going on. We had Swanbourne shut down. We had dogs roaming around. You know, it was very surreal, to be honest.
Yeah, I couldn't imagine. So back to you for a sec. The Navy, 11 years spent. What was your career path, I guess, in the Navy? You went on initially to row the boat, and then you ended up doing what?
No, so if you're smart, you try not to get too many qualifications, because that means more jobs that you have to do. So I did actually get getting my boat license, but I'm smart not to do that. That means I'll have to. Shit, no, I don't want to do that. No, I actually joined up as a linguist in the Navy. I actually wanted to be a flight attendant for the Air Force, and I got that position, but then I somehow said the word languages, so I loved talking different languages. So they said, we'll do a linguist test. It's a 5% pass rate, and somehow I passed it, and they said, you're becoming a linguist. You're not becoming a flight attendant. Just choose the service. So I said, well, I want to be air. I want to be different. But my girlfriend took that last position, so Navy it was for me. So I joined up as a linguist in the Navy, went off to Spook School to become a linguist, and I was 19. I was more interested in the SAS guys that come in to do a crash course in Arabic than I was about studying Indonesian. So it came quite apparent that I was too young. I was too young to be doing a serious job like that. And I then got redirected into another occupation. But honestly, a medic, that's the job for me. I loved it. I got told as my family not to become a medic, because we already have one of those in the family. Yeah, so that my family said, don't become a medic. We've already got a medic in the family. I thought, well, I'm going to become a medic then. So I just rocked up to class one day and they said, your name's not on the list. And I said, well, it should be. My name should be on the list. It should be the first one being Armstrong. And I bluffed my way. I actually wasn't on the list, but I was sick and tired of waiting for boards to come up. So I just turned up and sat down and they didn't bother
telling me to leave. I love that, mate. Yes, that's cool. Look at you. So I love that at the end of the day, you just rock up and say, hey, listen, Armstrong, I should be at the top of the list, mate. And then ultimately, oh, yeah, our bad. And they just scroll it in pencil or something. Yeah, Armstrong done. You could have gone one step further and said, and by the way, I think I've done this before and passed. They could have just signed you off. Mate, I love it.
Realize, but then they loved the fact that I had the courage to do it, so they just left me on the course.
That is brilliant, mate. And so your career in the Navy over the course, because we've got so much to talk about, right? And the time goes quick, and I really want to cover so much with you because you're a fascinating human and you've got so much going on. Was it 11 years spent as a medic?
Yes, yeah. So I had a bit of training of being a linguist at the beginning, but 11 years as a medic. So as soon as I got rated and into the fleet, I was posted to Cerberus, which is where I did my training. No one wants to be at Cerberus. But I quickly got to hang out with the civilians and I did night shifts with the civvies, which was great. So I got to hang out with the doctors. I went to Phillip Island, so I love motorbikes, and I was paramedic with the superbikes, which was amazing. But my heart was Western Australia. I wanted to be back with my dad. I wanted to be with SAF. And I have a beautiful mentor whose son is a submariner, and I just wanted to work with submarines as well. So
wow.
West is where I wanted. And that's where I got. They didn't want me to come west, but I fought, went to west, and I stayed here ever since.
So did you spend time on submarines as well?
No, I had to. Unfortunately, I wanted to go straight to subs, but they wouldn't let me. They said I had to do my sea time on a skimmer, which is a normal ship.
Yep.
And when my first ship was HMS Success. And I don't know if you remember HMS Success. She was known as that ship back in 2009. And that was my first posting as seaman, and what an eye-opener. And that was a party ship. So after that, I was like, I'm not going to submarine. This is awesome.
I'm staying above the waterline. Yeah, brilliant.
Yeah.
Talk to us about, you got out of the Navy, and that's where you linked up with a wonderful Ivy as well to support you post-Navy career. Is that correct?
Yes.
And so talk to me then, post-Navy career. So I read continually at the moment about different sports people that are really struggling with that transition out of the sport, being a professional athlete, to all of a sudden being a civilian. And there's quite a few actually funny, not funny as in ha-ha funny, but they're funny enough. I was reading the Daily Mail this morning and there was another case of, you know, a former professional athlete. It was an AFL footballer who now looks like he's going to do some serious jail time with drug charges and everything else. And it's all, and straight away, the excuse comes out of it that there's a struggle of transition from professional sporting life to civilian life. What's that like from a military perspective? And I've got to be careful here with you because I know how passionate you are about our veterans and supporting our veterans. So I've got to make sure 4 hours later when I'm still on this subject. But talk to me, how challenging is that?
I think the best way, I've been out 6 years this month, and it feels like it was yesterday. The best way that it was described to me is it's like having your time in jail. You're so institutionally blind, life outside, like, it feels like life outside stops, you know what I mean? But then all of a sudden, you're put out into society. People think differently, they talk differently to you. You kind of don't know how to mingle with others. Our language, our sense of humour, everything is completely different. It's bloody hard. And especially for me, I went from at 30 years of age never to work again because I'm considered broken. That's hard, you know. I'm 30. Like, I want to be a career woman, I want to be an officer.
Yeah.
I want to be dreams. It's so hard. And that transition, the best way my psychologist at the time told me was it's like a cliff, and then you've got a gap, and you've got another cliff, and you've got to jump. And sometimes you just don't, you don't land on the other side, you fall down the gap. And that is so true. So I think it's been about 5 years it took me to get to the other side. And I think that's a good time period for the majority of the people, but a lot can happen in 5 years. And I feel it's very much similar to people that have been brought up in the sporting environment, especially if they've competed internationally. That's all they've known. And you just want to get that adrenaline constantly, like going to sea, going, waking up, and next thing you're in a different country. It's amazing.
Yeah.
It's don't get me wrong, it's not always fun. But you forget about those times. You think about the camaraderie and the fun times.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, hanging out with primary school parents that talk about...
Yeah, well, let's add that to the dynamics of Carney. You're also a mother, aren't you? Two sons?
Yeah.
And how...
I'm a single... Yeah.
And how old are they? You're a single mother of two, correct?
Yeah, so I've got an 11-year-old and a 7-year-old.
So, you know, like between that and we haven't even scratched the surface of some of the things you do, sounds like you've got a lot of spare time on your hands, Carney. Mate, so let's jump ahead a little bit because I sent out a little piece about you yesterday, as I always do for these sessions, and obviously I gave a snapshot around Carney and who Carney is, and I know you saw that piece as well. And so there's people, obviously, what I do often in this session is we jump around an awful lot because I want to give the tasting plate overview, I guess, and then we go back to certain things and drill into it a little bit more. So where did the Invictus Games come into it? What is the Invictus Games predominantly? And let's talk about that a little bit.
Well, Invictus Games came along because I was a medic and I have struggled with my weight all my life. I have been morbidly obese for 30 years.
Stop it.
And then 100%. So I was always about 100 kilos, if not more. And I, lucky I was a medic, so I could always fudge my weight. I came to my annual test, that's the truth. And when it comes to fitness, I hated it. I used to be the last one running, kitty eyes scream at me. I hated it. And I had a patient who had a stroke right in front of me, and he had competed in Toronto. And I saw how much it benefited him. And I wanted to invite the Invictus Games into the rehab program here in Western Australia for our defence force. So I sat down and had coffee with him when I was in maternity leave, and I said to him and a friend of mine who was the swimming coach, I said, how can I implement this as a medic? And they said, by you doing it, Carney. And I laughed. And they didn't know how much I struggled. At the time, I was actually anorexic. So after I had my kids, I nearly stroked out because that's how fat I was. And so I went the opposite way, and I was about 50 kilos. And I said, I can't do this. I can't run. Even saying the words, I cry because of anxiety. And they said, that's why. If you do it, you can show people, everyone knows how much you struggle with your weight and how much you struggle with sport and fitness. If you can do it, then anyone can do it. And it's not about fitness. It's just about movement and getting up and trying. So I did. It took me 6 years. So I was back up for the Sydney Games, I was back up for the Hay Games, and then I finally got over the line for Germany. And so it wasn't easy. I pushed myself that hard in the pool for the Sydney Games. So I thought, I'm in the Navy. How hard is it? I can swim. But I have panic attacks, and I have panic attacks under the water. So now when I hop in the water, I freak out and ID reacts. So that's a work in progress now because I kind of, you know, remember, my body remembers how much I used to push myself. But that's why I did the sprinting for 100 metres, because I can't run, and it's up here. And my body doesn't know the difference between cardiovascular fitness and having a panic attack. So when I start getting my elevated heart rate, my body thinks I'm having a panic attack. So it's really, really difficult. So when my categories, they changed it, because I'm doing an open category for Invictus, for all my limbs. So, and I've got 2 bum hips. So I'm going up against women that are 20 and they've just got mental health, no physical injuries. And they said my category this year for the first time, if you've got pain in your legs or your hips or whatnot, you can do 100 metres and 200 metres in a chair. So I took that option, and that was so much harder.
Wow, yeah.
But it's a powerful mind. And I had 3 weeks training, and at the time I was dating a beautiful man who... due to his service in the Navy, is a high paraplegic, the teeth are paraplegic, so just under his nipple line, he's paralyzed in the Navy. And he's been in a chair for 23 years. So him and I were dating at the time, and we lived in Adelaide, and I'm just so lucky that I was dating him because he's actually a 2-time World Ironman. After that, now he's on his way to the Olympic Games. We had 3 weeks training, up and down the street, dodging cars, and that's all I had, and the love happening. Put it that way.
Mate, that's remarkable, Carney. I mean, I there's too much to digest there because I go back to just the start of this when you said, you know, sitting here and looking, you know, at the visual of your good self and also having met you so many times and everything else, you know, it sort of doesn't sit together when you say you're morbidly obese, you know, like there's something in that for people listening in right now. I mean, you're saying that most of your life, or 30 year or whatever it been, you've been morbidly obese, but all of a sudden one day you had this moment of change. And look at you today, and you look amazing, and you look strong, and you look fit and healthy and everything else. I mean, what was the biggest motivator for that change?
It was 2 days before I gave birth to my first child, and I was 25 and 1 week old. So I was young, and it was February, and I went to have my checkup, and I knew I had preeclampsia. So I'm a medic. I knew. But my priorities, like, I didn't know how serious preeclampsia was. I wanted to get my hair done, so it was going in for a season. But I didn't realise how dangerous it was to the baby. I just thought, oh, it's just dangerous to me. I'll be fine. And when I went in, my blood pressure, I was laying down and we couldn't get it below 180.
Wow.
And that
was because I was hooked. Yeah.
A bit. And then I thought, when I held my baby, my little son in my arms, I thought, I'm not here now just for me. I'm here for him. And
yes.
I can't be then that is not looking after myself. I need to show him that I might be a big person, but as long as I'm trying every day to be active and eat healthy and make good decisions, that's all you can do.
That's cool, mate. I've got to grab that quickly. That is cool. You said, I may be a big person, but I've just got to show that I'm trying, and I'm trying every day. And, you know, when I talk resilience quite often, I use that piece from the Pronk Brothers and from Flecker and Co. And that piece about the 1%, it's just about 1% and going forward every day. And so that just, I had to grab that piece because that's cool. You may have been overweight, but you needed to show that you were trying. And, you know, one of the things that motivates me, inspires me about your good self, Carney, so much is, and I've said this to Greg, who's listening in, of course, and I've said, you know, you're a tremendous role model. And so this is testament to that. You know, you're an incredible role model. You're a person that's, you know, who would have thought looking at you today that that's the journey you've been on amongst so many other little journeys that go with. So sorry to cut across you there, but that was just a cool piece, mate, to really emphasise and highlight. So you wanted to show to your son, even though he's just born, but ultimately going forward, you want to show that you're just trying. So
So the day to work, his dad deployed to the Middle East. So good old family Navy. So I just walked every day. So I was all alone. It was just my son and I. And dad was always away. So I just walked and walked and walked and walked. And that's how I lost 30 kilos in 12 months.
Wow. That's pretty cool. So let's jump ahead then to today. What does Carney do today for fitness, for activity? What is Carney, you know, what's your modern day, current day routine look like?
It changes. Yeah. I struggle. I still have it with my fitness. So I have an exercise physiologist that I have, and I see him twice a week, but I haven't seen him lately because I struggle. I do struggle. I struggle to go into the gym because everyone stares and I'm self-conscious. You know what I mean? That part of my brain is still there, and I get self-conscious because Ivy's there and everyone looks at me and Ivy. And so I still have what I call fat.
Especially when Ivy's lifting heavier weights than you. Ivy's on the bench press smacking them out.
I do, that's for sure. But I do stretching, and I've got some weights in my bedroom, and they're 8 kilo weights, and I just smash out a whole heap of arm stuff, and squats and whatnot, just to get my heart rate up, and then I feel a little bit better. But I do a lot of Pilates, and I do a lot of reformer Pilates, because that way, for my hips and whatnot,
it's easy.
But between yoga and Pilates, that's what gets me through, and then I take Ivy for a walk as well. But the walking is not for fat burning, that's more mental health.
Yes.
But it's just movement as well.
I like that, just movement. You know, we do a piece and I just talk about we were designed to lift, push, climb, pull, move. That's what we're designed to do as humans. But in the modern day, we live such sedentary lifestyles. And so not everyone, what I'm taking from this as well, Carney, is not everyone has to get run down to Rebel. I say this repetitively, run down to Rebel, get themselves a heap of Lycra and an expensive pair of shoes, join a gym and have a membership in their back pocket. You know, there's so much you can do, right? And it's just a case of I've got to push, I've got to pull, I've got to climb, I've got to lift, I've got to move. And whatever fits in any of those categories, you can just go and do, and you've just demonstrated that, right?
You know, my dad, I've never seen, so he's been 40 years SAS this year, so they celebrate 40 years. And he has never once in my life done any exercise. but he's constantly digging a hole, building a garage, doing something. I've never owned a bit of exercise equipment. I've never seen him go for a run, do push-ups, nothing. He was just active.
Yeah, I like that. That's a cool piece. I was just as you were saying that, and I won't sort of name drop the person here, but there's someone here. They've just got this natural energy, and they look like they spend too much time in the gym. But the truth is, same thing. They don't spend any time in the gym. They're just an active person. They've got a property. They're chopping down a tree. All those things we're designed to do. So you can make it very much unique to yourself. You just got to be active, which is what you've just suggested. Talk to me about the yoga, because I know you're big on the yoga side of things, and also you're big on veterans yoga. Talk to me a little bit about that.
So I got into yoga back in when I was trying to conceive my second child. I actually had fertility issues, and I was trying to conceive my second child, and they said yoga is really good for that. So I got into yoga, but I was a bigger person. I didn't have my first son, but I was still gaining a little bit of weight, and I found it quite hard on my wrists and whatnot.
Right.
So I first fell pregnant with my second, gained a lot of weight as always, and then afterwards I got back into it because a friend of mine really wanted me to come back onto the mat. So she introduced me to a fair different ways of doing yoga. But during COVID, it kept me sane. Like it was my savior. And then I lost a girlfriend 3 years ago this month. She took her life. And Leah and I were the same age. We served in the same ship together. And our kiddies were the same age. Our two boys were the same age, single mum, and our youngest played rugby league together. So the season before life, we spent 3 days or 3 afternoons together, and she still saw me as her medic. She still confined in me. She still asked me for advice. It shattered me. Like I spent 3 weeks in bed, just couldn't get out of bed. And I remember saying to this beautiful man who I look up to, he's 73, and he's, I call him my spiritual teacher. His son is actually a submariner that I look up to. He's now the admiral. And I said to him, "But Bill, I don't know what I'm going to do, but I just know I need to help the veterans and first responders, but particularly their children. And the only way I know how to help people is through yoga. So I'll start there, and I'm a very spiritual person, and I'll see what that takes me. And I'll go from there." And so I signed myself up to do my 350 hours of yoga and do trauma yoga. And it's just led me on this journey that it opens up, different areas. And the yoga that I do now is completely different to the yoga I did back then. I was doing quite high strenuous vinyasa.
Yes, yes. Is that power yoga?
I did do power yoga.
See, how's this, Carney? I know all about yoga, yet I have the flexibility of a broomstick. So I know what it is. I can spell it, but that's about it. So you move from a very sort of strong or power style of yoga to what does trauma-based yoga look like?
Listen into the body. So you get out of your head and you listen to your body. Because your body, there's a beautiful book called The Body Keeps the Score. Your body remembers everything. And, our head lights are cooler. And you just ask your body, what is it feeling today? What does it want? Does it like this stretch? Is this stretch bringing up certain emotions? And it sounds very touchy-feely. And at first I was thinking, oh, this is going to be really boring. But I always wanted to push myself on the mat, as a lot of defense people do. You've got to question yourself why. Like, why are you always hurrying? Why are you always pushing yourself? And when you start getting into your body and out of your head, pretty amazing, And you start listening to how your body is reacting to certain situations and the environment. It's pretty amazing because your body's quite numb, especially when you've had
So where are you practicing your yoga these days, Carney? What are you doing with it? Where are you practicing it? Who are you supporting with it? What's going on in that yoga world?
Well, I'm part of the Murdoch University. They're doing a dinner in America at the veteran fairs over there, yoga versus CBT, and we're doing it here in Australia in Murdoch University, which I'm part of the program. We were all ready to do it at the festa at the veteran centre there, but unfortunately, as we know, that's now closed down, so we're back to square one. So at the moment, it's been put on hold again, but I've got meetings with DVA and whatnot, and basically I'm that kind of person that I'm just going to get my yoga mat and I start videoing myself and I'm just going to start doing it. So that's who I am, and I'll just do it.
You've got to share it because, there's some opportunities. You and I, we're due for that conversation anyway to talk about that stuff. Now, Carney, just a couple of bits to give you a breath and to give me an opportunity just to touch base. Navy, medic, linguistics, is that how you say it?
Yes.
linguist, speaker, language person, hence why I didn't pass the course, right? Invictus Games, gold and silver medal, mother of two, yoga practitioner, part of studies to do with CBT as well. And again, so, and an advocate, a strong advocate for veterans, service dog support, all these different things. So, you know, we've already established how much spare time you have. So just to add to that, you're also an up-and-coming author. You're putting together a book as we speak. Let's talk about that a little bit. What's your book?
My book is about Ivy, my service dog. So my children found it very difficult that mummy walks around the dog. Everyone stares at us. And every single day I'll get a stranger come up to me and quite abruptly ask me, what's wrong with me? Why do you have a dog? What's wrong with you? And my eldest son has popped a lot of my PTSD, and he's now 11, and he doesn't like that. He gets very anxious. So I decided to write a book at home, just basically me writing it, putting stickers and photos of Ivy in it for my kids to be able to understand why I have a dog called Ivy and feel my special brain. When I was in Bethesda Hospital last year after the first games, I kind of went downhill and I found myself in hospital. And I mentioned that to my psychiatrist, who's a veteran himself. And he loved it. And he said, you've got to write that book. And I was,
yes, you do.
Everyone don't need to do that. So then he was very smart. He went to the Tronk brothers and said, hey, get Carney to do this book. And I remember saying to Ben about the book, and he's like, you've got to do that. So the story is, it's called The Adventures of Ivy May, and Ivy goes on making adventures. And it talks about resilience. So it's got a strong resilience theme, but it's about how Ivy was a service dog and developed anxiety that had to be reemployed, which is what happens to a lot of us defense people. And she struggles to be a service dog, and she meets a dog called Willow, who failed to be a vision and strain dog because she's got ADHD. But together they through vision. And then it's the adventures that she goes on. But it's based on a younger version of Carney. And I had to kind of get a little bit deep with myself and thought, well, what age in my life do I have benefit if I was a child? Because children relate to children.
Yeah.
But I would have benefited having Ivy. In reality, I would have benefited from having Ivy in Dale's form. But when 9/11 happened, that would have benefited. I would have, you know, if I would have loved to have that conversation with my dad to say, hey, Carney, I'm off to war. I'll see you around. But you've got Ivy. Because in my story, that little girl is going to have Ivy, and it's the adventures that they go on. And I'm going to include people that I've come across with. So I've come across some awesome guys that have left the regiment. They were dog handlers. And their dogs are retired, and they've jumped out of planes more times than any human being from the parachute school. They've gone to Afghanistan. These are dogs whose stories need to be told. And I want to tell them.
Carney, my bulldog won't even get off the couch. You have a dog that goes to Afghanistan and jumps out of a plane. I've got a bulldog that, one, I've got to lift him onto the couch, and two, he won't get off it, but if he does, I've got to lift him off it. So I'm pretty inspired. Hello, Ivy. Look, Ivy's joined.
Oh, yeah. I wanted to say hello, so she must have been hearing her name.
So do you know what's awesome? And I want to take advantage of this, Carney, is Carney came in for a visit, and she came in and brought the wonderful Ivy in, and Ivy was awesome, got a puppy chino at the cafe and sat down, and most people, 99% of the people, needed to pat Ivy and say hello. What's the best way for people listening, if they saw your good self out in the mean streets of Rockingham or Spearwood or whatever it be, and you're walking along with Ivy, what's the best way to engage with someone with a service dog, as opposed to, like you said, people saying, why's that lady got a dog? You know what I mean?
Yeah, so if a dog has got a jacket, or basically what we ask them to do is completely ignore the dog. Don't talk to the dog, don't look at the dog, completely ignore the dog, because it's distracting. But I understand that people are curious and people are dog lovers.
Yeah.
So just smile and say, I love your dog, how are you? But, you know, engage in me, not the dog. And then from there, you can tell that person is genuine. And then I like to use it as a teaching opportunity. And I'll take the jacket off if you pat her, because I love dogs. She loves being patted. But basically, when they've got a jacket on, you can't touch them because they're working.
Gotcha. So I'm Crystal. It's like I remember Toddy the Beagle at the airport. I remember the Beagle was jumping all over. Not my bag, someone else's bag. And I was very impressed, and I went to pat this beagle, and the lady pulled on the lead very sharply and said, "Come on, Toddy." So I always remembered Toddy the beagle. But if they're wearing the jacket, they're working. If they're not wearing the jacket, it symbolises to them that, okay, I'm off the clock. Is that correct?
Yeah. Like, when Ivy's got a jacket on, she's very, looks like she's sad, but she's actually numbing herself to her surroundings. But she's stimulus. A lot of smell, food, all that kind of stuff. So she's numbing herself, and she's just concentrating on my odour and what I'm releasing. It's all of, she faces it all the smells that gotcha. I release. But when she's got a jacket off, she wags her tail, she's allowed to sniff. She's allowed, doesn't lick, but she's allowed to lick. She's allowed to go and say hello to people. So that gives her permission to then be a dog. But otherwise, she won't know the difference. If you keep patting her while she's got her jacket on, she will stop. She'll start forgetting when she's got a jacket on and when she doesn't have a jacket on. And that's why it's so strict that we need to be able to separate the two and have two different swimming lanes. But she knows where she stands.
Mate, that's a done deal. That's really cool. So if someone's out, if Carnies are going into a restaurant in Fremantle, she's got Ivy with her, people should just leave you alone, so to speak. But if you're a dog lover or whatever else, maybe if they respectfully approached and sort of said, hey, do you mind if I touch your dog or pat your dog, to give you the opportunity to say, well, she's working at the moment or not working or whatever it be. Is that the right approach for people?
Yes and no, but you've got to remember it's a medical dog. So this is why I'm trying to educate yes. politicians. They don't even know. The head of politician was Pat Ivy, and I'm like, mate, you're in charge and you don't even know how to handle it. So she's a medical dog. So all, you know, guide dogs were not, they're all the same. You've got to understand, I've got it for PTSD, and some days I may not want to talk to anyone. Some
yes.
one might have died or whatnot. You don't know what they're, what they've got the dog for and what day they're having. So I guess when you make eye contact and smiles or beautiful dog and keep walking, sometimes there'll be an invitation for me to say, would you like to pat her? And I'll take a jacket off. You know what I mean? But some days I just want to get from point A to point B and I don't want to interact. So it is quite hard, but you just know by the body language, just use common sense. And it's, yeah. I guess my body language feeling relaxed and I'm smiling, eye contact to you, then engage in a conversation. But I tell you what, I know an SAS guy who we trained a lot last year together, and if you went up to him, I'm sure he'd probably headbutt you. Do you know what I mean? So you've just got to pick your... It's just a lot of reading body language, do you know what I mean?
Gotcha.
So I get a lot more out because I'm a female. He's covered in tattoos, and it's a bit scary. So I think that comes through education, hence why my book, hence why I'm with Paul Papalea to try and get more education happening with service dogs. Her legal right, she's allowed everywhere in Australia, except for Burns units, commercial kitchen, and actually the OR theatre itself. But businesses don't know that. So when they stop you and say, oh, sorry, no, dog's not allowed to be here. Oh, she's a service dog, here's my license, here's her jacket. And they say, no, they're not allowed here. They'll get fined, but that doesn't matter for me because you've already stimulated me, you've already triggered me, you've already, you know, aroused my nerves.
Yeah, well, it's already created more anxiety, hasn't it? Yeah. Now, Carney, I've got a little confession to make. When I met you at the Resilience Mentor course, when you weren't looking, I think I stuffed about 4 croissants into Ivy. You know, but they were healthy croissants. They said they were low fat or sugar free or something. But me being an animal lover and a dog lover, I noticed you were talking to Dr. Dan Pronk and you weren't looking in my direction. So I was just jamming croissants into Ivy. That's why Ivy hung out with me for the couple of days.
That she had to spend 3 days passing the food because she wouldn't even sit down. Like, she's a typical, an opportunity, she would eat.
Well, she's a black lab, right? So, look, let me jump away from Ivy for a minute, because otherwise I'm going to talk dogs and Ivy and everyone's going to say, I thought this was about resilience or something other. I'm down the track of talking about my pug. I don't know. So, look, let's talk about the Invictus Games a bit, you know? Like, so the events, did you do archery as well?
Yeah, so archery's my baby. I always wanted to do archery, but I was embarrassed to even try because my dad's an SAS sniper. My mum, you know,
so there's not much of a high standard that you had to try and achieve.
As a medic, I'm non-weapon, so I don't touch weapons. I'm a medic, junior prevention and whatnot. So when I went to Jack Jacksonville just before I got out of the Navy, they tapped me on the shoulder and said, oh, look, the training it was to be games. Would you like to go to Jacksonville for some training? And I'm like, oh, yeah, I'll go to Jacksonville. And the Invictus Games at the moment is run by the Army. And so it's very Army style. Right. And my dear John let up just about 2 days before competition over in America saying, sorry, I didn't make the swimming team. And I was just kind of like, I was so upset. I was, you know. And I remember having coffee with my coach who's Army, and I just said, look, mate, part of me just wants to go, stuff you, defense. I'll kick me out at the end of the month with PTSD. And now you're telling me that I haven't made a team, but whilst I'm in America representing Australia, 2 days before competition, like, I just want to really scream off my lungs and just kind of just tell the fans what I think. But I know that that's not the right way to act, and that's not the attitude to have. So when I was having my coffee with my coach, he said, Carney, you've got one more day until competition. What sport have you always wanted to try? And I said, oh, we've always wanted to do archery, but I'm too embarrassed. So at the time, I was struggling with my weight. I was 48 kilos. I was tiny. I had, you know, fake eyelashes and long hair, all that kind of stuff like I do now. I looked a little bit like a Barbie doll, so to speak. And the American coach was an Army, Salander, pro hunting, you know, right to bear arms sort of bloke.
That doesn't sound like many Americans.
My rule was low blood sugar, so there was endless amount of chocolate there. So he said to me, go and ask him, Carney, to teach you how to shoot, but I want to watch you ask him because it's going to be hilarious because you look like a Barbie doll. So I asked him, and he looked me up and down and just said, go and grab a bow and start shooting. And I just went, okay. And I was shooting my arrows, and he said, Ozzy, you might want to have it up the right way. I was shooting upside down. And I just went, oh, crap. After 2 hours of training, I was shaking. My arms were shaking.
Yeah, yeah.
He's not going to beat me. I'm going to freaking persevere because I know everyone's staring at me because look at this Barbie doll sort of thing. Now, I was shooting a 32-pound bow for 2 hours, which is well and truly too heavy for me. I shoot 18-pound bow now, but I was stubborn. And the next day, we had a competition, and I won out of all the females. And I went, holy crap, I won? And he said, yes, when you get back down under, you tell the archery team that you're going to be in it for the Sydney Games. And I said, mate, that's not how it works down under. So he sent a letter, an email to an archery coach, who's actually a psychiatrist, which is pretty ironic. And when I got back to Australia, I got my invitation to do the AIS and try out for the archery team. And I didn't make the team, but I made it as a backup team. But it introduced me to archery, and I love it.
Well, isn't it addictive? Because you know, I'm a compound bow shooter, and that of targets only because I'm an animal lover. You know, it's more deceptive and harder work than you think. People think, oh, I'll just pick up a bow and pull a string back. But like you said, the 34 pounds too, it's and by weight ratio or size ratio for someone like yourself, that's a lot of strain, right? Yeah. Like, I mean, we've wound our bows up to about, you know, 70 plus kilos, and you don't shoot for hours on end. You shoot a half a dozen to a dozen arrows and you've done a workout. And then you look at the pros and they shoot 100 plus pound, but at your size and weight and everything else, you know, 35 pounds is quite a pull on a bow, right? It's quite a workout.
Yeah, so they all had 34 pounds just because one size fits all, basically. But I didn't tell you, but in the Invictus Games, I actually, the last day was archery. And it meant a lot to me. That was my vanity. But I was absolutely pooped. Like, it was so hot over there. I was tired. I did athletics for the first few days, and I'm pretty sure Europeans don't believe in air conditioning, so it was stinking hot. And for me, I had so much for archery. So my dad was there. My dad was able to come to Germany and watch me.
So just a little bit of pressure now. Just a little bit of pressure when it comes to being accurate. Brilliant.
Coach, America was there.
Yeah.
Jesse, you know, Ozzy, you're here. I have a pink bow. I've got pink lipstick. I've got pink eye, you know, glasses on. I wanted to make a statement. Now, I had bronze in my hand. And I remember, as you know, archery is all about the mind. And I remember it was the first of six after a long day of shooting. And I had the UK chick next to me, and I had gotten in her head. She had choked. I was four, she was zero. I knew I had her. I had her in my hand. And I thought bronze would be great to my collection of gold and silver. But then I got in my head. And I looked at her, and I thought, she had been practicing on her bow so much, and I hadn't been. And I looked to my right hand side, and there was a lady from the Ukraine who had just been a prisoner of war exchange.
Wow.
About 3 or 4 months, and she was shooting bows. And I thought, I don't deserve bronze. This lady deserves bronze. I haven't been spending that much time on my bow. And here I am about to get bronze, like freaking it. And what had happened? I stayed at 4 and she got 6. So she took away bronze. And I was okay with that because I knew I got in my head, and I knew that's the first rule that you don't get in your head. You always think about the process. If you think of anything else but the process, the arrows will tell you.
So can I grab that? Carney, I need to grab that. Because I had a conversation with someone yesterday and we talked about things and I said, just follow the process. I love that. I need to steal that as an analogy right now. Just follow the process and let the arrow do the work. And you know, that's actually really cool to highlight, and hence why I'm doing it and giving the emphasis, because sometimes it's just follow the process. You know, it's circle of control stuff as opposed to circle of concern stuff. Stay in the circle of control. Just follow the process. Trust the process is probably another way of saying it as well. I like that, mate.
So I did miss out on bronze. Shit happens. And I made a very dear friend out of it. So Lindsay and I are very good mates. And to me, that's worth more than a bronze medal. But also the best part is my dad, who is a sniper, he's got a compound bow. After that, he was just like, you know, to recurve, mate. So he's actually down at Bunbury Way, and he's going to be doing his come and try when they get enough numbers. And then him and I are going to go down every second Sunday and spend the day together shooting. And that is what I'm looking forward to, because I haven't had with my dad particularly shooting, but every second Sunday, him and I just being on the range together, shooting some arrows.
It's going to be amazing. Carney, do you know it's addictive, right? And I will say this, you've got to get off the recurve and get onto a compound. Cronin and I, when we go to the range and see people on a recurve, we sort of like, we're the rednecks, you know. You've got to jack it up and you've got to go get a multi-cam camo one and everything else. You've got to get the John Deere hunting trucker's cap and you've got to get the whole kit, mate. You've got to go redneck as hell. Mate, let's do this, Carney, because I've got 10 minutes left with you and I want to capitalise on everything. My God. And in 10 minutes, how do I do that? But what I've heard, though, throughout this as well, is your absolute fear of certain things or reluctance or anxiety, whatever combination to try certain things, yet you've found a way to try them, right? You've just gone and done it. And Dr. Phil Jauncey, who's an incredible psychologist that myself and the team had the privilege of spending time with, you know, He spoke of and he talked of, you know, it's not about necessarily finding that positive mindset. It's about positive action will provide you a positive mindset. So it's like just go and do, right? So how has Carney, from a, you know, the perspective in the context of resilience, how have you faced those fears, those anxieties, and just gone and done? You know, so you've said, you know, I've never picked up a bow before, but, you know, I've just gone and done, because I deal with a lot of people, myself included, that we have a tendency to say, I'd love to, but, you know, how does Carney just find this way to say, I'm scared, I'm shaking in my boots, you know, it's not for me, I've been obese, whatever it be, but you know what, I'm just going to go and do. How does Carney do that?
I'm very stubborn. And when it comes to ego, I can't stand people, guys that have ego. I like to prove them wrong. So when it came to archery and whatnot, people judge me. You know, like they looked at me and they judged me. And they went, you can't do this. So I was just like, well, you don't know who I'm capable of. So to me, I was just like, mind doesn't matter. I want to prove you wrong because you judged me on my looks, not on my as a person. And I use that mentality, fake it till you make it. And talking about me going on my medics course, you know, if you're going to do something, do it with confidence and people will just leave you alone. So
that's a cool piece as well. Look at you with all the gems.
And you've got all the paramedics. The medics are more paramedic. And you do your mass casualties and you've got your patients everywhere screaming and whatnot and the shit's going like this and you're fighting a war at the same time. You just do the duck. So, you know, the whole calm on the outside, but the shit yourself underneath. And that is what I kind of revert back to, you know what I mean? I revert back inside, I'm putting myself. But on the outside, I've got this strong, don't everything attitude, I guess you could say. And I just go back to my upbringing. My upbringing was quite harsh. You know, I have a very military upbringing. And I just thought, you know, you don't know what I'm capable of doing. So just, it's mind over matter. And if you don't mind, then it doesn't matter. And I'm just stubborn. And I was like,
oh, mate, brilliant.
I like to burn my bras, and, you know, women can do everything because there's some things that, trust me, we can't. But I like to prove people wrong. And I like to prove, I like to see their facial reaction to me go, oh, shit, can this be that? Or, oh, I didn't realize that. Don't ever judge someone until you've gotten to know them. And that's what I like to kind of remind people.
That's really cool, mate. That's really cool. It's really quite insightful and profound. We got a couple of minutes to go, and I want to give a window at the end for you to engage a little bit. So I just want to talk about a few things. One, I'm beyond proud of you, Carney, because as you've described to me, you swear like a sailor, because you are a sailor. Yet you haven't sworn once in this session, including the fact that even then you did a beautiful little PG version of emphasizing the point. You haven't sworn once. I've probably cursed it now, because yesterday when we had a conversation, mate, I was horrified. And I grew up in a rugby league and Harbour Town, a fisherman. So, mate, well done. Secondly, you know, the fact that you've been a Navy medic, you've had an interesting upbringing where, you know, a lot of movement, a lot of travel, military environment, you know, dad being an SAS sniper. You've got your own battles that you need to manage. You're an advocate for service dogs. You're an advocate for veteran support work. You're right now practicing training, developing your skills in the whole yoga space as well. You're writing a book, a children's book. I also, obviously, I see everything on LinkedIn every few days where you're rubbing shoulders with whoever it be and you're advocating things. I've left out a crucial piece. You're a mother of two young boys, and that's never going to be easy. And it's only going to get challenging as they grow older and everything else. They find their identities. You've been very much overweight. You've lent into things, whether it be in the Invictus Games, archery or other, that you weren't confident to do and everything else. Jesus, Carney. What else does Carney like to do in a spare time? What else does Carney do just for Carney? You know, just take all that, put all that to the side for a minute. What does Carney do? Is there a Carney likes to sit back and watch, I don't know, the Kardashians? What else is there?
ADHD. So I can't do one thing. I have to keep changing. So at the moment, I'm painting furniture outside. I'm standing back and painting furniture at the moment. But I do a little bit of everything. I try and date, go on dates, because, you know, I'm a single mum, and that's not, that's difficult. You try and date when you've got a service dog and you're young and you're a veteran, and people just, I find that men love independent women, but they don't. You know what I mean? I'm a very strong personality, and that can be quite challenging in the dating world. So,
Carney, I'm sorry, mate. Carney, I don't want to one-up you, but you reckon that's your challenge in the dating world? I've got a mirror in my house. I know what the challenge is. That's why I got married, because my wife is the first one that actually spent any time with me. So whatever, mate, to your challenges in the dating world, mate, they're not comparative to mine. So sorry, mate. So the dating's there. What else is there for Carney?
I'm on the phone a lot to a lot of friends. So
connection.
That's where the magic happens. You know, like I said to you before, I was in Bethesda Hospital after the Invictus Games, and, you know, with veterans and first responders, we met, and there's a group of us. We had some bad nights, and when you wake up and you've had a bad dream and whatnot, you need to connect, you need to touch base with someone, and that's where the magic happens. And just being able to help them through certain things. So, for an example, on Tuesday, I'm literally holding a friend's hand. He's a 50-year-old male, but he wants to talk to the politician about how he's feeling about the hospital
prison. Well, mate, I got 2 minutes, and I want to get you on at the end, because I know there's some people that will want to ask you a question or make a statement or a comment. That's what we do at the end, you know, and you know, someone will ask a question, whatever it be. Carney, you probably, you know, wrapped it up beautifully, because those that know when I talk about resilience work and so on and so forth, I talk about the importance of tribe, and I talk about the need that we're social creatures. We are on this planet today through our ability to do what other animals can't do as well as we do, which is to come together, support each other, and build societies and communities and everything else. So you've just again highlighted another aspect of why you're so strong, is that community, that connection with other people, the generosity that you're showing and everything else. I mean, you are a true role model, Carney. I will say that. Yeah, that's what's so inspiring about you. You're a true role model. You've got an incredible story behind you. And you've got an incredible story in front of you. But you're doing all those things, mate. You're trying things, you're doing things, you're giving things a go, you're acknowledging your own, you know, failings, if you like, you acknowledge your own, you know, sensitivities to things, but you're moving forward and you're doing that with the support of other great people. You've referenced, you know, you've got yourself an exercise physiologist, you've got a psychiatrist, you've got a psychologist, you've got a community around you, you know, you've spent time with Greg Cream as an example, you know, like you've got all these people that you choose to put around you, not isolate yourself from. So, mate, I need to say before I throw you over to the group, and we've had a good cohort on, but I need to thank you, mate, because you're a tremendous inspiration, a tremendous role model, and we're going to see more of you because we're going to have you heavily involved with a lot of things that we do going. Carney, from me, mate, and an awesome thank you, and over to you guys. Come online right now, and if there's anything you want to ask Carney, any comments or statements you want to make, let's do that, and let's, you know, show a bit of gratitude and thanks towards Carney, if we could, please.
Carney, unbelievable. Yesterday I was going on a bit of a walk, and there was someone leading a dog. The dog had a jacket on, and I'm sure the jacket said nervous, the words nervous on it, and you brought it to mind straight away. I haven't seen a lot of, dogs around, you know, CI dogs and all that, or I-seeing dogs, but what would that have been? It was a yellow jacket.
Yeah, so a lot of pets, forget about being a pet dog, that would be a working dog, and I explained to other dog handlers that this dog is nervous, anxious, deaf, blind, doesn't work for other dogs. Just you, he's not touched because that dog gets nervous and it might back him.
Makes sense.
Thank you very much, Hayden. Unbelievable. Thank you.
Anyone else got some commentary or some thoughts for Carney, please, before we've got about a minute or so left in us?
Hey Carney, just want to thank you for your openness. And like I made the comment in there because I always get on, but just a lot of good things in it. You know, and it refers back to the black book that Clay's put together as workability and our purpose. And sometimes we forget what that is and how do we come back to what our goals are. But yeah, appreciate that. It's really cool.
Thank you.
Carney, what I've got here is I've got the message board. It's lighting up with a lot of commentary. You know, we've had, you know, well over, you know, 50-odd people this morning and a lot of commentary coming up. And it is that 8 o'clock mark. What I will do is I'll pass over any of these messages or thoughts or commentary to your good self. But we'll wrap it up there. And because it is a Friday morning, I'm sure you've got something to do. I'm sure you're not going back to do nothing. Carney, thank you, mate. You're a superstar, eh? And we're going to speak again real soon.
Thank you very much.